Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown, and today I have the author of Desi's Divided, The Political Lives of South Asian Americans. The book was published by the University of Minnesota Press in 2016. The author of the book is Sanjay Mishra. Sanjay, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I remember, it must have been at APSA that we talked about this book, and it wasn't yet out, and you were very excited about its publication. This is a subject matter that I do some work in, so I read the book with a lot of interest, but I think it's a book that a lot of other people are going to have an interest in as well. Before we get to it, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you've been, where you are now, where you're headed in the future. So tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I am an assistant professor of political science at Drew University in New Jersey. Drew is in Madison, New Jersey. I did my PhD in political science from the University of Southern California. And my own interest is in Asian American politics, largely speaking. Within that, I look at South Asians. I also look at Muslims, broadly speaking. And my work is sort of focused on South Asians in the U.S., but part of my work is also to look at transnational processes, the ways in which immigrant communities create more than one political space, which is beyond U.S., they create a transnational space. So that is also something which I am interested in. So I keep track of political developments in home country. And so that's broadly what I do. And that's my interest.
Wonderful. Now, let's talk about the book. And let's start at the very start of the book and with the title. For those not familiar with the term DESI, would you start by defining that term? Who uses the term DESI? And what does the term actually mean?
Okay, so the term DESI is something which comes from multiple South Asian languages. So the term is used in Hindi language. It's also used in Urdu language and also used in Bangla. And these are languages spoken in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh. And roughly speaking, the term means native, right? And so often the term has been in diaspora outside India. The term has often been used to refer to people from South Asia. And what this term allows us to do is that it allows us to move beyond nation of origin-based identity. So when I use the term Desi, I'm possibly referring to people from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka. So it has that wider inclusivity, which Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi does not have. So the term comes from there, and it has been now being widely used by the community as well as scholars who work on South Asians. So that's how I would define the term.
Now, this may be a common term, but this is a quite varied group of people that you just described. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the main lines of difference, to allude again to your title? What are the main areas of division between this community? Is it primarily nationality, or is it religion, or is it culture? So tell us about some of the divisions that fit into this title of yours.
So I would say there are multiple axes of commonality, and there are axes of divisions as well. So nation of origin is one of the main distinctions which South Asians group have. So we have Indian Americans, Pakistani Americans, and Bangladeshi Americans, if I talk about three groups which I have focused on. And so all these three groups are divided along the lines of national origin, but I would not say that Indians can be demarcated from Pakistanis and Bangladeshis on the basis of religion, because India is, I think, second or third largest country with the third largest population of Muslims, right? And so India has a large number of Muslims. So Indian American community is also sort of constituted by Muslims, right? And if we look at language, then Urdu, which is the most common language in Pakistan, Urdu is spoken by Indians as well. And if we look at Bangla, Bangla is the language which Bangladeshis speak, but Bangla is a common language in India as well. People, particularly in West Bengal, speak Bangla. So I would say nation of origin is the main distinguishing feature. Beyond that, there are things which communities share, right? So share culture, they share language, they share food, and they share a way of life which is kind of, which has emerged out of a long history of South Asia. So I would say commonalities are many more than differences. And one major line of difference is nation of origin.
Now, one of the parts of the book is the significance of religion, and it is an important dimension of Desi American life. And so how has religion shaped some of the what you describe in the book as the fractured political response to discrimination against South Asians in the post-9/11 period? Talk about how that event affected the different parts of this community.
So in my book, I talk about, there's an entire chapter on post-9/11 period, and I try to understand the ways in which South Asians or Desis were impacted by the racial hate crimes which were triggered by the 9/11 events. And I make this argument that South Asians or Desis of different different backgrounds, whether they were Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Sikhs, they were all impacted by this wave of racial discrimination. And one of the first persons who got killed in the post 9/11 racial hate crime was a Sikh from India named Balbir Singh, who was from Arizona. And so the point I make in my book is that South Asians were impacted irrespective of their religious affiliation, and just the physical feature, just the brown skin color, that made them the target of racial hate crime. Now, I also make this point that when we look at the ways in which South Asians were impacted, we see that certain communities were impacted much more than the other communities. So, for example, Sikhs were one of the most targeted groups because of their appearance, because of their religiously mandated turban and flowing beard. And there are many, many instances of Sikhs being targeted as Muslims or as Arabs or as simply terrorists. And so we see Sikhs as one of the most important targets of hate crime in that period. And then if we look at Muslims, Muslims were also impacted in a big way. And Muslims were not only impacted by hate crimes out on the streets, by the public, but they were also impacted by the ways in which law enforcement agencies were targeting Muslim communities and detaining them, interrogating them, and deporting some of them on a very flimsy grounds, right? So we see that even though the entire community was impacted, Hindus, Muslims, and Sikhs, communities were impacted differently. Now, in the chapter, I also talk about the ways in which they reacted to racial discrimination, to hate crime. And in that, I make this point that there were two kinds of reaction. One kind of reaction was to bring everyone together, to build a coalition, of Indian, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, Hindu, Muslim, Sikhs, and protest against racial discrimination, mobilize against racial discriminations. And groups like SALT in DC, DRUM in New York City, ASAN in Los Angeles, they tried to build that pan-ethnic coalition. They also reached out to Arab communities. They also reached out to other Asian American communities. So you have that kind of response, which was much more pan-ethnic, which was much more appealing to the broader South Asian or Desi identity. There was other kind of reaction or response, which was much more worrying. And part of my book talks about that Hindu American community, even though it was racialized, it was seen as suspicious. But one trend within the Hindu American community was to foreground its Hindu identity and to suggest that we are not Muslims and we are distinct from Muslim communities. So even though we are South Asians, we are brown, but we are different, and hence trying to distance themselves from the community which was targeted, right? So there was that kind of response, which was very distinct. Then we also see that early on, even within Sikh community, there was this response where a large number of Sikh individuals and other organizations, initially this started off with this reaction that Sikhs are not Muslims, and this is a case of mistaken identity, right? And there was an attempt to distance Sikhs from Muslims. In later period, Sikh organizations realized that this is not the right track to take, and then they sort of started working with Muslim organizations, with Arab organizations, but there was a very distinct trend within Sikh community also, and still is there, where the attempt is to sort of foreground Sikh identity and say that we are not Muslims, right? So there was a trend of distinct mobilization along the lines of religious identity, Muslim, Sikh, Hindu, and that sort of indicated that the community was much more fractured along the lines of religious identity, and any wider mobilization which unifies the entire community would have to deal with this religious fracture. I'm not making the point in my book that that kind of mobilization is not possible or it has not been done, but I make this point that we have to acknowledge these two distinct trends within the community, which suggest that religion could be a major line of fracture within the community. And here I want to very quickly bring the transnational dimension of this whole mobilization, where politics around country of origin, the contestation or the hostility between India and Pakistan, Pakistan and Bangladesh, all of that comes into play. And also the kind of politics which is going on in India right now for the last 10 years, the emergence of Hindu nationalist politics in India, which has risen on the basis of targeting Muslims in major ways, that has created a politics around dividing communities. And that has also then looped into the kind of mobilization that we see in the U.S. So those are the ways in which I talk about religious fracture, and I talk about how a unified Desi or South Asian mobilization has challenges which are coming from the arena of religious identity.
Now let's take this up to the current election that we're in the midst of. Who are some of the prominent members of the community that are shaping politics in 2016? Is this a community that has particular leaders that are a part of the presidential campaign, or maybe will be a part of the congressional campaigns as we move towards November? So tell us about what's going on right now.
So I would say there are no major leaders in the community particularly in the electoral arena, who shape the community politics, the people who are most prominent, who are most well-known South Asians or Indian Americans, they have ended up not making that kind of connection to the South Asian community. And here I am referring to one of the presidential contenders who dropped out early on, Bobby Jindal, the ex-governor of Louisiana. And so he was somebody who was one of the prominent persons from the community, but he never built a politics which was in any way connected to the politics of South Asians. He always distanced himself from South Asian community, and he always presented himself in a very, very de-racialized way. Right. So if there is somebody who is well known, that person is not connected to how community is mobilizing. Same thing goes for governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley. She's also well known, but she's also not connected to the politics of South Asians, and her politics is also built on a very different kind of a de-racialized appeal.
Let me just follow up just for a second. Does that have anything to do with state politics? The two of them are in some pretty particular state political environments, Louisiana and South Carolina, respectively.
Right.
Does the ways in which they have de-emphasized that part of their identity have anything to do with where South Asians live in the country and where they're likely to be powerful electoral blocks? Where I live, it would be hard for a candidate not to take advantage of the large South Asian community.
Right.
Tell us maybe just a little bit about the dispersion across the country and how that might relate to candidate success or failure.
Right. So, you raise a very good point, and I completely agree that in South Carolina or Louisiana, they cannot imagine doing a politics which has appeal to South Asians or which has a racial content. But one has to acknowledge that certain kinds of localities produce a particular kind of politics. So they are representing a particular kind of politics, and that politics has been shaped by where they are. And in a way, their politics is shaped by who they are and where they are, and because of that, they can never represent South Asian community in that way. Now, moving on to your second part of your question, where are South Asians concentrated? I think the hub of South Asian community is New York, New Jersey area, California, particularly Northern California, but increasingly Southern California is also becoming a major hub, and then you have a large South Asian community in Chicago, you also have a very fast-growing community in Washington D.C. area, Maryland, Washington D.C. area. About the representation, I think we are seeing two kinds of trends again within South Asian community. One kind of trend is that of trying to gain representation from places where there is some level of concentration of South Asians, right? So we have had South Asian candidates contesting from Northern California. We have had candidates trying to contest at the local level in New York also, and they are they have fashioned a very different kind of politics where they're trying to reach out to South Asian community. But I have noticed, in my book, I have described that in greater detail. I have noticed that within South Asian community, we are seeing a trend where South Asian Americans, particularly Indian Americans, have been trying to gain representation from areas which are primarily white majority areas. So we have examples of representation at state level Ohio, in Kansas, in Iowa, in very white electoral districts in Pennsylvania. And in my book, I give a table of candidates who have contested from those electoral districts, and they have also succeeded in some cases. So we see a trend of representation among South Asians where they're trying to gain representation from a white majority district, and they present themselves as de-racialized candidates and candidates who are talented, well-educated, who can solve problems, and who do not have to reach out to South Asians for their votes. So we see that kind of trend also. And so in my book, I talk about this conundrum that if South Asians end up getting representation from those electoral districts, then that would mean that they would not reach out to rank and file South Asians. They would not mobilize rank and file South Asians. And so one of the assumptions of ethnic politics is that when ethnic candidates get representation, that is linked to the mobilization of ethnic community. And in case of South Asians getting represented from a white majority district, that kind of trend is not visible. So so that is something that I have observed among South Asians. That is a phenomena that has been observed among Asian Americans also, and that needs further research, further probing, and the ways in which we need to understand that in greater detail.
Yeah, again, the name of the book, Daisy's Divided, The Political Lives of South Asian Americans, published by the University of Minnesota Press. Sanjay Mishra, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed talking to you.